I put this title out there. Then I actually noticed that I gave this year, in the year 2012, on this topic. That's available on YU Torah. But so you have to shift it around a little bit. So I think over the course of the winter, quoted from this already before, I was sent, due to my efforts, which aren't really such major efforts, for a particular project. So the National Council was kind enough to send me five Sefarim from Eliezer Melamed. Eliezer Melamed is really an up-and-coming posik in Eretz Yisrael. It really sounds like one of these, you know, within the Dati Lumi community, but expanding even beyond that. Most of his, this must be a translation. I don't know if he speaks English, but certainly he's not writing in English, but he has many Sefarim on many different topics. So one of them that was sent to me was on the laws of Pesach. So those that are interested, it's a nice mix of you know, when everyone writes a sefer on areas of halacha, so as Rabbi Broyd actually spoke about this past Shabbos, you get into the conflict of codification versus expansion, and where do you include other opinions, where do you not include other opinions, etc. So it's a nice path along the middle, not just straight halacha, but a little bit of discussion, but not too much discussion that you just get lost in the weeds. So that seems to be the style of his farm. So he does have an entire chapter on the issues with regards to matzah. So that played in some of tonight's sources, and some of it was just picked up on my own, and some of it was, we actually will go back to a couple of years ago for something here, because it's just interesting and something you might only get here. So anyways, the Pasuk tells us in Shmos, Perek Yud Beis, source number, you're going to have to watch the matzahs, or ushmartem. We gave a drush a couple of years ago about shmira really meaning awaiting the matzah. That's probably not what it means here. Like awaiting the matzah, anticipating the matzah. But probably what it means here is ushmartem, that you have to do some type of shmira, some type of extra careful caring for the matzah, guarding, perhaps guarding. Guardianship of matzah or something else. So that's what the pasuk tells us. So what impact does that then have on halacha? So in Shulchan Aruch, back going through the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch says, "In lashin matzos mitzvah v'lo ofenosa al yedei." So he says one is not permitted to knead the matzah mitzvah, knead, K-N-E-A-D, knead the matzah, or nor bake it by a non-Jew, by a chereshot of a katan, or nor by somebody who is deaf, Adam or young, Shota is crazy, and Katan is somebody who is young. So they are not permitted. So where does that come from? So that comes from this pasuk of Ushmartim Esamatzos. Not according to all Rishonim. I don't believe it's an explicit Gemara anywhere. But many Rishonim then talk about the idea that that matzah has to be done prepared in a specific way. So why is that? So they trace it back to this pasuk, Ushmartim Esamatzos. Why is that? So Ushmartim Esamatzos, what does it mean? What would it possibly mean to guard the matzah? Does it mean to guard it from chametz? So that's a little bit problematic to just make that assumption. Oh, the mitzvah of the extra addition of shmurah matzah is that we make sure there's no chametz in it. But what about the potato kugel that we eat, right? And what about the fruit gels that we eat over the course of Pesach, that we don't have to make sure that there's no chametz in it? So obviously there's a prohibition of making sure there's no chametz in our things the entire time. So that drove the Rishonim to say, it must mean something more than that. It must mean that it's more than just watching to make sure there's no chametz in it. But beyond that, certainly on a level of Doraisa, certainly if we're going to imply that the Torah commanded it. So I understand maybe the Rabbanim, something's going to require more careful than others. Maybe that's why there's a prohibition of kitniyos, santeh, etc. But at a d'oraisa level, d'oraisa, you're not allowed to have chametz in anything. Neither in the jelly rings, nothing. So what is unique about matzah? So what seems to be unique about matzah is that there's a specific idea of kavanah. So somebody has to, while they're making the matzah, have in mind that this is for the purpose of the mitzvah of matzah. Right? As opposed to the jelly rings, there is no contrary to proper belief, no specific mitzvah of eating jelly rings over the course of Pesach. There is a specific mitzvah of eating matzah, and that requires some amount of lishma, that requires kavana, that requires having in mind that this is for the purpose of using it for the mitzvahs of matzah. Okay, so, yes?
Well, you could also argue though that matzah has to be watched more, because if you don't, it will become chametz. Jelly rings, not likely to.
Okay, so that is true. The only problem, that would be a Durabanan concern. That wouldn't be a Doraisa concern. I mean, it's hard to say that the Torah imposes that you have to make sure nothing, that chametz doesn't get into your jelly rings nor into your matzah, and the Torah imposes extra watchfulness when it comes to matzah. It's hard to figure.
Because matzah will become chametz.
No, I understand that, but it's hard to say that that's a specific. You have to watch everything to make sure it doesn't become chametz. So it's hard. Yes, I understand derabanan, it's going to require an extra amount of shmir, an extra meshkiach, extra carefulness. But the prohibition d'oraisa is across the board. Right? On a biblical level, you're not allowed to have chametz in anything, neither your jelly rings nor your matzah. So that's what there are. Not all Rishonim agree to this. There is he quotes a ra'ah. I didn't see the ra'ah quote in the Beis Yosef, so I'm not sure where the ra'ah is. But he quoted a ra'ah that disagrees and says, "Well, the mitzvah of ushmartem es matzos is like you said. Make sure there's no matzah. Make sure there's no chametz that gets into it.
Process that can lead.
I understand, but everything's a process that can lead to chametz because you have to make sure that that the guy who's packaging the jelly rings isn't eating a hamburger next to it. Yeah. Okay, hamburger with a bun. All right. So the Shulchan Aruch says, so when does one have to watch this from? So achitim says the Shulchan Aruch achitim she'osim behem matzos mitzvah tov l'sham shol yiflo aleihem mayim. B'shas Katsir. The one has to make sure it's good to watch them, that water not fall on them, even from the time of cutting, from the time of harvesting. Ulapachlus, or at least Mishas Techina, from the time of grinding. If you have no choice, you can even buy wheat from the shuk, wheat from the giant, from the flour. Sorry, flour. You can buy flour from the marketplace. We don't recommend that today, right? To walk into Giant and over the course of Pesach and go just pick up a thing of Gold's flour, right? Not appropriate to do. Our flour, we assumed, is treated beforehand, not just ground up wheat that goes into our flour, but it's treated, it's soaked in things beforehand. So therefore, that's considered to be chametz. But in theory, during the time of Chazal, or even during the time of the Rishonim, up to a couple of centuries ago, you bought flour in the shuk. You could go buy flour in the shuk, at least prior to Pesach, I can use it for matzah as well. But ideally,
what's the tov l'shom? I mean, in other words, it's not really chametz. It's what kind of chametz we're talking about?
Right. So this is the sugya of shmura matzah. So when do you have to watch it from? So he's saying l'chadchila. This gets into the fight I'm having with Sheldon here. Right, it's hard to kind of draw the line. So Shulchan Aruch is he giving you the din of Shmura Matzah, or is he giving you a recommendation in terms of best practices of Hashkacha? So he's saying Shmura Matzah should be watched. What does it mean that it's watched? It doesn't mean you're watching.
What's the outcome of watching? In other words, if wheat, the kernels get wet, so what?
The chametz process could begin.
Well, so then if that can rise, then you can't say tov. Then you have to say, you're talking about from when it's on the, when it's still attached to the ground, it's still in the field.
It can't become chametz.
While still
it's tovish.
If it's
right.
harvested.
Only once it's harvested is that's the problem. Right. Now
so you can't tell me tov, then you have to.
Right, except there is the grains. The chametz process begins, so that means the whole thing all of a sudden becomes chametz. So the way I understand it is, we're afraid that a drop of water will fall on part of it, and then in order for it to be kosher l'Pesach, you're going to require bittel. You're going to require nullification. That seems to be what's going on here. That these are going to be, if you're going to assume that shmura matzah only has to do with watching it more carefully, so then but it's only a din l'chachila, not a din b'di'eved, right? It's only ideally not. So you have to then say, well, what happens if the chametz process does begin on part of the flour? Let's say there is someone sneezes in the warehouse someplace.
Yeah.
That doesn't. Sorry to be graphic. Pours a little bit of water, the fire, whatever goes on. So a tiny bit of an amount might become chametz. When you mix it throughout the entire process, so then we assume that that's going to be nullified. Now, that doesn't feel very good to know that we're eating nullified chametz while enjoying our matzah, right? That doesn't sound very good. That's, I think, where this Shulchan Aruch is coming in. Before Pesach, there would. Before Pesach, there would be, right. Before Pesach, if it's considered nullified. Yeah. So then it's nullified, and then you enter the Pesach. We did this Minchamar, there's a comeback, etc. But bottom line is that when you have a thing of dough, and a tiny bit of that dough was chametz, and then you ultimately bake it all, so that's going to be considered nullified. Hold the thought on nullification till later, because I'll make you feel worse a little bit later on. So, don't worry, nothing gross, nothing like that. But okay, so there is, so anyways, the assumption is, so it sounds like number four, right, source number two has to do with the kavana put into the mitzvah, that we have in mind while we're making these matzos, that it's going to be made in a specific way because it is for a mitzvah. Source is number three, and source number four puts this together and says that you're going to make this matzos mitzvah, says the Mishabur, ha-matzos she'ochlin b'shtei halelos. The matzos that you're going to eat the first two nights, l'kayim behen mitzvos be'erev tochlu matzos, in order to fulfill the mitzvah, him tzrichim shmira l'yaseira. That requires extra watchfulness. V'lo da'ilanu v'meshe ein lanu re'yusa shel chashash chimutz el shetzarek shimur yaseira l'shem matzos mitzvah. So it comes to Mishabur and puts it together and says when it comes to making sure there's no chametz in it, so then there's different levels of how careful you have to be. But for the first two nights, there's something else. That's for the purpose of a mitzvah. And comes the Mishnah Berurah and says, aha, and that's not a tough nun gimel issue, that's a tough samach issue. That has to do with the right people making the matzah in order to ensure that it is that it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. So shmur matzah, really, when you buy shmur matzah in the store, it really means two things. It means A, it's been watched for longer, and that and there's a less and less of a chance that it actually has any amount of chametz in it. That's A. And B, it was made for the purpose of the mitzvah. Right? So those are the two things that you're purchasing when you spend eight times the amount on shmur matzah.
You know how far back the shmur goes on shmur matzah? Today?
So nowadays, the shmur matzah will be from Shas Ketzirah.
Sure. I mean,
really, even the Tel Aviv matzahs you buy, I think there they say Mishas, I think they only have a shkacha from the time of Tchina, but I think even they really make their dinner going from Mishas Ketzirah. I mean, everything's going to be Mishas Ketzirah, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there's no moisture in it, as we'll get to. Now, we said this is for the purpose of the mitzvah. So there are those that are machmir to only eat shmur matzah over the course of Pesach. Now, mind you, if you're really going to be machmir on that, it's got to be full deal. You know, that means no sponge cake either. You know, that means you're going all out in order to fulfill that idea of only eating shmur matzah. But that is, there is an idea out there. What would that be based on? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Vilna Gaon.
What's wrong with sponge cake, yes?
No, because it's potato. Potato flour.
Well, maybe you're a sponge cake.
Yeah,
well, you know.
You mean
or you can go to Ann's house.
You mean if it's matzah, what do we sponge cake?
No, if it's matzah, if one wants to be machmir and only shmur matzah, and you're going to eat cakes that have matzah meal in it. You can get shmur matzah meal. But the truth is, I went to Borough Park a couple of years ago, I was in Borough Park, you could not buy non shmur matzah meal. And you could barely buy any matzah meal. There was barely any matzah meal of it to be had in the entire borough of Park. Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah comments when it comes to the when it comes to this idea of having shmur matzah. They're basically that v'shim hagra kasvu dal kol panim mitzvah ika lechol matzah kol shiva el she'enu chiyuv. That really our obligation is only to eat matzah the first night. Is there a mitzvah to eating it the rest of matzah? Is there the rest of Pesach? Is there a mitzvah to eat matzah on the third day of Chol HaMoed? Well, not really. Not really. It seems like the way the Gemara darshens it out, the obligation is only on the first night. So they say in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that said that he would eat matzos on throughout Pesach, shmur matzah throughout Pesach, and he held that it's a mitzvah to eat it the rest of Pesach. What mitzvah is it? So the terminology they use is a mitzvah kiyumis. Even though it's not an obligation, it's a fulfillment. Remember Schechter, when he quoted this, would always kind of scratch his head and say, I don't know what that means. A mitzvah means it's a mitzvah. It doesn't mean you have a choice. But anyways, that's the way.
According to the garden, you don't make a bracha.
Right, okay, but to say that there's a mitzvah
it's
that
a mitzvah, you ought to make
okay.
a bracha.
I hear. So why is it that the Vilna Gaon would do that? Why would he eat shmer matzah the entire Pesach? So the way they normally say it over is because there's this mitzvah to eat it the rest of the Pesach, and it's possible that you could only fulfill the mitzvah if the matzah was made for the purpose. Matzah was made for the purpose of the mitzvah, right? So therefore, the Vilna Gaon. So if I'm going to fulfill a mitzvah every time I take a bite out of matzah, so it better be shmur matzah that was made for the purpose of the mitzvah. Otherwise, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah. So that I took a look today in the Maaseh Rav. What is the Maaseh Rav? So the Maaseh Rav is, I believe, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, right? Wrote down.
One of the Talmidim.
Rav Chaim Volozhiner gives a haskama. He didn't actually do it. Okay. So one of the Talmidim, the Vilna Gaon, after the Vilna Gaon passed away, decided to write down 250 of the Vilna Gaon's favorite things to do. Or 250 things that the Vilna Gaon did that was somewhat unusual from everybody else. Similar to Rav Shechter did about the Rav Soloveitchik with his series Nefesh HaRav. So they did it about the Vilna Gaon, but they're very short. Just 250 things. They recently, not so recently anymore, 20 years ago, came out with a edition filled with footnotes and where he says this and how he does it, etc. But one line just straight out of the Maaseh Rav is as follows. Hamatzos shel kol yemei ha-Pesach yu mechitim mishumaros. He would be makbid that they be from shmur matzah b'shas ketzira, from the time of the harvesting. V'hichmir ma'od b'davar machmas shevedinaseinu mitzuyin ma'od me'gesham b'meha ketzir. Because in our neck of the woods, in Lithuania, there was a lot of rain during when they would harvest it. V'atavu al p'nei asada, and the grain was left out on the field. V'od kama chashashos, and many other concerns. Davi kamo ischazik reyesa, which strengthened the reyesa, strengthened the problem. Which sounds like, from the Maaseh Rav, it sounds like, why did the Vilna Gaon eat only shmur matzah for all of Pesach? Not because of a fulfillment of the mitzvah, but because he was afraid of chametz, right? The prohibition of chametz applies to all of Pesach. So I didn't do enough research to figure out, so where does that other side come from? But that is what that's what's said in the name of the Vilna Gaon. Okay, one other thought here, and that is, if shmur matzah is defined as being either mishas ketzira or mishas techina, that you have to start watching it from the time of the cutting or the time of the grinding. So, says the Bi'ur Halacha, this is just, well, the way you say it. If you put two and two together, so that should mean that also the Lishma should have to be from the time of the Ketzira. Right? That the idea of having in mind that this is for the purpose of a mitzvah, that should also be from the time of the cutting. If you put all of what we said together so far. So is that true?
You are designating it, this is going to be for Shmur Matzah.
Not only that, but that would mean that the guy driving the combine would have to be doing it l'shem matzah's mitzvah, right? And that seems to be what the implication is. So the Bureau, Joe Schmo might be okay. It's, you know, Jack McGraw might be the problem. But that would mean that the grinder, that would mean that all of the steps leading up to it should have that concern as well. So the Taz suggests that no, the only concern, the only time when one actually has to do the Shema is actually when you put the water and the wheat together. Only from the time of putting it together, not from the time before. The Bi'ur Halacha continues on and says that truth is one can question that, as we just questioned that, but he says still that's the minhag. The minhag is that we let Jim McGraw run his combine, and we let whoever it is grind, come with another name that's not too offensive, grind the grain.
Mr. Miller
can mill the grains and turn it into flour, but Yankel Beryl is the one that's going to have to take the wheat and put it together with the water. I think that's what shmur matzah is. Shmur matzah, shmur matzah is not care. There are, I think one could probably get on the market, where Yankel Beryl actually went to the field and cut the wheat, and then Shmerel Beryl grounded it up. And, one could find that, but the general hand shmur matzah that you buy is relying on this task.
I'm confused. I thought we just said it's from Siman Tzir. Now we're saying it's from Lisha.
No, so he's saying the idea of L'shem Matzos Mitzvah only is from Lisha, but the Shmira in terms of the carefulness of Chametz is from earlier. Right, according to what we've said, right, one could make a case and say, no, you should do it from earlier.
How do you have any shmir if Jim McGraw is cutting the wheat?
So he's saying there are two. Oh, you have Kavim Mashkiach.
Ah.
Somebody watch.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Okay, so you're saying there's no, it's not like there's no shmir, it's just that and they know you
right.
can do it.
Until the water and the grain gets mixed, there's no din of the shem matzos mitzvah.
Oh, as opposed
there is a din of shmira because of the chametz.
Oh.
Yeah, but once it's made, Does the distribution have
once
to
it's baked?
Made. Yeah.
Oh yeah, right. So it gets put.
Shouldn't have to be.
No, it gets put into a box, and wherever the box ends up, it ends up. No, it doesn't. You don't need to have. I mean, you have the hashgacha like everything else you buy in the store has hashgacha, which generally is you seal the thing, and you only buy sealed containers in the store.
Okay.
Right. So yes. How hard would it be? How expensive? For Streitz and Shabbats to have all their matzah shmirah.
So that's what I think most of it is. It would require having a mashgiach in the field to have it be real shmirah.
So let me just hire one more guy.
Do you want to pay more for Pesach?
How much more can it be?
They've been saying that for many years, and Pesach keeps getting more and more expensive.
Well, the regular matzah.
I'm not going to become a mashgiach.
Okay, so moving on to the issue of machine matzahs. We've already been going on for a while. So machine matzahs was a major, major controversy. It really deserves a shear in its own right and historical analysis of the issue of machine matzahs. Machine matzahs became popular in the mid-1800s, and it immediately became very, very questionable. And it really split among geographic lines. The German poskim seemed to be okay with it, and the Polish poskim and Hungarian poskim seemed to be against it. The Lithuanians also seemed to go to the German, or ultimately fell on the German side, even though at that time I'm not sure where they fell. So there is a sociological issue reason behind it, and that is the richer places, nobody was making money off of being the matzah roller, while in the poor communities in Hungary and Poland, so that was a big source of parnassah. If you're all of a sudden going to industrialize the entire thing, so then it's going to be taking away parnassah from people. So that was a sociological background to understand it, but ultimately those on each side of the issue came up with their svaros, whether they are pro or con. The issue, just to run through, there's two shilas that are involved. One shila is let's say you have a non-Jew making the matzah, but you have a Jew omid al gabehem, you have a Jew overseeing them. So does that make it any better? So that itself is questionable. A Jew overseeing, does that make it better, or does it not? And is a machine better or worse than that? Meaning, if a Jew helps the non-Jew, says, no, you remember this is for the mitzvah, this is for the mitzvah, this is for the mitzvah, this is for the mitzvah. So the non-Jew perhaps could say, in his mind, I don't know what a mitzvah is, I don't really care what a mitzvah is, I just want to get paid at the end of the day. Right? A machine doesn't have that choice. A machine won't reject the command of the person overseeing him. On the other hand, one could take the other perspective and say, well, a non-Jew has the ability to at least understand that, oh, this is for Jewish ritual purposes, and whatever that rabbi is saying over my head, that's fine with me, and I hope I hope the Jews are happy with me, etc. As opposed to a machine doesn't have that possibility. So that's discussion A when it comes to the machine matzah. And then discussion B circles around this Gemara in Maseches Chulin, that perhaps that when one pushes a button, what impact does that have on the mice? What impact does that have on the actions that are taking place afterwards? So there is a Gemara in Maseches Chulin where it talks about shechita of all things. That's what's discussed in the beginning of Maseches Chulin. So can shechita be done by a mill? It would be a pretty impressive thing for it to happen. But let's say you have a circling mill. Can a kosher shechita be done in that way? That's what the Gemara asks. And there's conflicting opinions about it. And first the Gemara says, well, one's talking about a potter's wheel, one's versus a water mill. A potter's wheel, I think, is being turned manually, while a water's mill is being turned by water. And it says, even by a water mill. And it says, what's a problem? A problem, it would not be good if it's koach sheni, if it's secondary source, as opposed to if it's primary source, then it would be okay. So what does that mean, primary versus secondary? So if when one releases the dam in order for the water to then flow and move the wheel, so the first impact that the water has on the mill, that's going to be considered koach rishon. If it's just a continuous flow of water that's going to continue flowing afterwards, so that's what we consider koach sheni. That's what we consider a secondary purpose. That's the Gemara in Chulin. So the question is, what does pushing a button mean? So, and also, you have to realize also that the original machine matzahs wasn't that you pushed a button and that it was a crank. It was something that was keeping it moving, etc. which seems like it did contain human actions pretty much the whole way through. So does pushing a button, does that make it better or does that make it worse? Does pushing a crank that has 27 gears sending all these different things happening, is that better, or is that then meaning that it's a secondary thing, as opposed to pushing a button where everything is just all of a sudden active at once? So one can make a case that that's both better as well as worse. On the back of the page, I gave you Rabbi Elazar Melamed's footnote on the matter. He quotes, and you can see the people as they line up about five lines from the top. He says, among those who prohibit machine matzah. Oh, and there's another concern as well, which probably has been most, I think, would give in and say it's been alleviated today, and that is there chametz stuck in the machines? Right? Using these machines, is that going to lead to a greater concern of chametz? So those that prohibited it, prohibited for all of those reasons. Rav Shlomo Kluger was very prominent prohibiting it. Rav Chaim Halberstam, the Ger Rebbe, the Sukhchev, the Avni Nezer, all of those are for the Hasidim from Poland who prohibit it. And even today, Hasidim Poskim tend to dismiss machine-made matzah. I'm not sure if he means dismiss it as being not kosher l'Pesach, or dismiss it as being just not roi for the Seder. But among those who permit it, he says, Shlomo Mish was very prominent in permitting it. The Pharisee Yisrael, Ksav Sofer, and the Aruch there. So Ksav Sofer was Hungarian, I believe from the wealthier part of Hungary, though, I think. I'm not sure. But the Sholem Isha, Tiferes Yisrael, and Aruch Lener, all of them are German. So it really divided amongst geographic lines. And then those that say that it's even better. And he quotes from Meir Simcha, the Or Sameach, and of Shmuel Salant, who is from Yerushalayim, and that's why the Lithuanian community seems to accept it. So if you ask, I think Bob Pransky, he tells stories of being, I think, a space seder maybe, and given machine matzah. I don't want to say, is it, you know, the Rishvei use machine matzah, is that true? You use machine matzah for the mitzvah? For the mitzvah on Seder night, you use machine matzah, really?
No.
Okay. Now, Hasidim have taken over the world, so very few people use machine matzah Seder night, but there were certainly 50, there were people at the Seder that would use machine matzah. And for these reasons, he said, here he quotes it, thus my teacher Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook would eat machine-made matzah at the Seder. And he says, Rav Minna Har, Rav Masas also preferred machine-made matzah, because they felt it was actually preferable, that the concern about chametz is even less when using machines as opposed to using hand. He concludes it by saying, handmade matzah enhances the mitzvah based on my father's reasoning. Why does it? So if you continue on in the footnote, he says that even though the machines perhaps advanced faster than the handmade, now the handmaids have cut up and surpassed. So the chumras involved in a handmade matzah factory perhaps surpassed. I don't know. Knowing what kosher standards are in America today, they don't really allow a hamburger roll within like 2 miles of these factories nowadays. I think both of them are really pretty literally airtight when it comes to the chametz issue. I think people just like the way machine matzah, hand matzah looks at the Seder table. That's the way all the pictures look, so that's what people use. Okay. I think it tastes better. That's a machlokas. That's a machlokas around the table. Okay, a couple of other issues when it comes to the making of the matzahs. So source number 11 and 12. 11 is the idea of egg matzahs. So the concern about egg matzahs are that they are... is that they speed up the chametz process. So one has to be careful. So for that reason comes the Ramah in the italics. It says, "Ubedino seilu ein noagim lolish b'mei peros." And nowadays we don't use this stuff. Filiktu famatzas ein noagim rak la'achar fiyasan ba'udan chamin. Even to liktu famatzas is to, I think, prepare the. Not sure what that is. I'm not sure what that's referring to. But we don't use it until after it's baked. I mean, we will not allow it to come into contact with matzah until after it's baked. And of course, we have many in. We know the non-Gerusha won't even allow it after it gets baked either. But that is the egg matzahs. We unless there is some specific reason why one would need it, which the Ramah includes the dispensation of the tzarchi chola or zake, and not going to be able to eat it otherwise. Which I don't know if it really makes a difference anymore. Bisman hazeh, we don't use egg matzahs at our Seder or throughout Pesach as well. Not because of a lishma or it's not authentic matzahs, but it's also a chametz concern. And the Ramah said, it's a chametz issue, so therefore we don't use any egg matzahs anymore.
It's just a chametz issue. It's not a...
Well, you also wouldn't be yotze your matzahs because it's not flour and water. But it... But besides not using it at your Seder, it's also...
Everybody says you can't use it at the Seder. The question is whether it's acceptable as non-chametz
right.
The rest of the...
So we don't assume that it is chametz, and that if it brought into your house, you got to burn it or anything. You got to burn... That would actually be a good thing to do, to use for bedikas chametz. But we don't go that far. Our minhag is just not to eat it because of the concern that it could become chametz. It's becoming less and less prominent. I remember even when I was growing up, you had to be careful. There were a lot of products on the shelf that were made of egg matzah that had hashkachas for Pesach, or at least in the Pesach section, there were egg matzahs. I think nowadays it's become much more much better about that. Yeah.
Isn't the concept that fruit juice does not become chametz?
I'm sorry, you're right. The Mechaber is Mekel on it, and the Ramah is Machmer on it. So why don't we do it? Maybe because there's water mixed in or something. Because we're concerned about the water that's mixed in. I think it's pure fruit juice, it doesn't. But when the water gets mixed in, then it's a problem, and then it becomes chametz faster. We discussed previously the issue of Mayim Shalanu, the issue that the water has to be left overnight, because once the water is too hot, it becomes... it could cause the chametz process to happen faster. So therefore the water is drawn the night before, left out overnight, so it's assumed to be room temperature. So many, Lamed here points out that nowadays in certain climates, the whole thing gets reversed. Mm-hmm. And the assumption of Mayim Shalanu was in a colder, I guess it could come out of a hot spring or something, and then you want it to cool off. Nowadays, sometimes it comes out hot, and the opposite, it comes out cold, and it actually ends up becoming warmer because you left that overnight. But still, nevertheless, that's the din. We leave out water the night before in order to be used for the purposes of matzah.
Is that true for all shmatz or only shmur?
I believe it's used for all. I believe it's used for all matzahs, yeah. Okay, when it comes to... Okay, so I put out a heading here, Arizona matzahs. So what is the story of the Arizona matzahs? A couple years ago, I gave a shiur here. Why the best matzahs come from Arizona. So my story with this, my introduction to this was, I think, our first Pesach when we were in Arizona. My father comes into our... It wasn't our first Pesach. It must have been a few months before our first Pesach. My father comes and says, I don't know why, but there were 15 Sakhmer Hasidim on my plane. I don't know what's going on here. So it turns out, and he said, I first found them because I was walking through the airport, and I see these guys about calling out Mincha, and I thought it was a mirage. What do I see here? And then no, come. So all right, so I went, and they were there. So what is the story? So one of the Satmars, and that's one of the issues here on the page. One of the sects of Satmars kind of split. One of them owns land in Arizona, specifically for the purpose of growing wheat for matzahs. Why would they do that? So in the 70s, 60s and 70s, it is known because it's very dry. So who cares? So hold on. So the Sakhmer Rav would go to Arizona because it was good for his, I don't know if he had asthma, it was good for his breathing. Many people would, I don't know if he personally had asthma, but he used to go to Tucson and spend some time there. And he's had the idea, this would be a good place to grow matzahs. Why? So it's based on the following wheat. Grow wheat for matzahs. Why did he have this idea? So he actually quotes it from, there's a Rashba here. So the Rashba says, the second line here, Hadar min mepera kol shah gabi trumas chala bepesach shelo aysa l'shas hakosher heichidam ikagon da ach mitzvah mechubar. Now what is the din by wheat that never was actually kosher? How would that happen? That became chametz while still attached to the ground. Heicha mechubar bali de chimutz shere'in l'chatfua shelo naflu aleha bain bebechumar. Because where we live, so maybe in other places it's not the case, like in Eretz Yisrael it's not the case, where wheat grows over the summer and then the water and then there's no rain over the summer, so you don't have to be concerned. He says, but where we live, it does rain. It rains all year round. So is rain going to fall on the wheat and begin it and start and have it begin the chametz process? So the Rashba says, if it is totally ripe when it's in the ground. It doesn't need to be in the ground anymore at all. If it's totally dry on the ground, it's as if it was put in a flask. It's as if it was separated from the ground. And it will start the chametz process if water falls on it. So it sounds like it should be. So what's going on? Where the Rashba lived in Spain, or we live in America, it rains all year round. The wheat is in the ground. The wheat grows and grows and grows, and then we don't get around to cutting it. So you don't get around to cutting it right away, and then it rains. So guess what's going to happen? The wheat that's in the ground is going to begin the chametz process. That's the concern. So the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins this way. The Shulchan Aruch says that if you have totally dry wheat that's in the ground and it rains, so it's as if it's as if it was put into a barrel. So therefore, one should try to cut it pretty quickly. So they pointed out that in America, it became even worse. The problem, after the Industrial Revolution, the problem became even more pronounced. Why? Because it used to be that wheat would grow, and then you go out with your sickle, and you'd start cutting and cutting and cutting and cutting and cutting, and okay, hopefully you get as much as you can done. But when they started using the combine, so the combine demands that, in order for it to run efficiently, it demands that the wheat actually be drier, it actually be stuck in for even longer and to be dry. So now you're actually in violation of this. Not necessarily in violation, but this concern is raised. So this concern is already put forth by Achronim. The Shari Tshuva on the page of the Mishnah Berurah raises this issue and says, yeah, you know, it could be that some of it becomes chametz, but what can we do? There's a little bit in there. Don't worry, it gets nullified, it gets bottled, and that's what I meant by, and I said earlier, that pretty much all the matzah that you're going to eat might have some amount of chametz in it that we assume gets nullified. So then out goes the Sakhmar Rav to Tucson, Arizona, and says, wow, it's very dry here. So not only is it not going to rain once the wheat grows, there's not even going to be any dew on the wheat. There's not going to be any mixture of the liquid with the wheat. So maybe we should start growing matzahs here. Wheat here. So they started growing wheat and they tried it 1 year and apparently it tasted terrible. So they kind of gave up on the plan. So then someone came back and did research. This is the way the story was told to me. In the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, someone came back and did research and came up with a better style of wheat that would be able to be grown in Arizona. And they actually went out to Yuma, Arizona. Yuma is not, there's no airport in Yuma. Yuma is, when you drive from Phoenix to San Diego, Yuma is the only civilization in between. But it's not much of a civilization. What?
Completely.
Other than Calexico and Mexicali and like a few other, there is nary a gas station other than in Yuma, Arizona. There's a famous jail in Yuma, Arizona. There's a couple things to see in Yuma. But they bought a field near Yuma, Arizona, and every year around December time, you can always see pictures of it on Yeshiva World News. The Sakhmarov, one of them goes out to Arizona in order to do the first Katsira, in order to do the first cut. And that's the wheat that they use. So you could actually go into a store in Borough Park, Muncie, the real friend, you'll see Arizona matzos. And that's what it is. It's matzos that come from Arizona in order to fulfill. Not right. It's not just about iced tea anymore, which I think is made in Illinois. I don't think it's even made in Arizona. But this is real hardcore, right, Arizona. That's why the best matzos come from Arizona. On the bottom here, you have I won't go through it, but it became an issue of conflict between the Sakhmar split. There's the Williamsburg Sakhmars and the Muncie Sakhmars, or the Curious Yoel Sakhmars, and there are Taina. That maybe it's no good, maybe it is good, maybe it's so good. Anyways, I don't know if the matter has been settled since I saw this kuntres about 10 years ago or so. One other, I think two other things I have here on the bottom. The Gemara in Maseches Pesachim. So the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim discusses making matzos into various shapes. So the Gemara raises concerns about shaping your matzah, because we're concerned that if you get so involved in the making of the shape, so you're going to lose track of time and it's going to become chametz. So the Gemara actually tells a story of this fellow named, where was it? They asked about on the second line, why can't we do this? So they're going to be handling over it, and it's going to become chametz. So Ah, so actually, you can make it with a we can make it with a mold. V'kvena kevan, and it's going to be a stay. You're not going to have to worry about it. So Amr lo, they responded with the famous terminology Yomru. They're going to say kol asrikin asurin usriki baitus mutarin. But we're going to say all of the srikas are prohibited, but the sriki of baitus are okay. Rather, what does that mean? What terminology do we have in halacha for this? So that was actually asked on the same gemara appears in Masechta Skulin, and that was asked on a kol b'china that I had in Chulin. What is the halachic terminology for this? And it was just thank you. I was sitting there for 2 hours with that term just not coming into my head, and I actually had a date with Chava that night, and I was ready to get, I said, look, I can't think of the term. So the person said to the person who was giving the b'china, Rabbi Maybrook, said, so take it with you. Think of it, it'll come to you. So I remember that night we were sitting in a hotel lobby someplace, and all of a sudden I just shouted out, low plug! And Chava said, what are you saying? That's the answer. And I took out the bechina from my pocket, filled it in. That was the pshat that's here. That's the idea that even though if perhaps the reason for gezeir doesn't apply to a particular person, or a particular situation, generally speaking, the gezeira will apply anyways, even though it doesn't have that particular application. That's that terminology that comes out from this Gemara. It turns out being that we don't really pass in that way, that the Gemara continues on and says that matzos, if they're very thin, you don't have to worry about it. It comes out with a couple of reasons why it generally isn't going to apply. That appears in Shulchan Aruch. And one other din that it mentions here, one you have to be a little bit careful about this, of ein adam yotze yidei chovaso b'matzah gezula, that a person can't fulfill their obligation with stolen matzos. So would anybody ever think to have stolen matzos to save the table? Well, one could, like, you know, if you have a tab at a grocery store, these questions could conceivably come up, that the person is expecting their payment, you haven't paid them yet, or they ask you to pay them, they say, oh, I'll get back to you next week, and they're kind of upset about it. So these issues, so one should make sure that the matzah that you have at your seder table is fully bought and fully paid for. There is, we discussed a shir a couple of years ago, there is a Gemara in Pesachim as well as Masechta Sukkah that seems to apply that not only can the matzahs not be stolen, but the matzahs have to be yours, that you actually have to own your chametz, own your matzah. You have to actually be in ownership of the matzah. That's what seems to come out from the Gemara in two different places. So you look up and down Shulchan Aruch, you can't find any such halacha. So I remember looking into this a couple of years ago, and the best answer I got back, was something called nishtamnu hashitos, that the Yerushalayim just didn't talk about it. And the fact that the people didn't talk about it, don't think that you're such a chacham that you could go back in Shulchan Aruch and figure out the all of a sudden open up a new chumrah just by you looking back in Shulchan Aruch. That seemed back into the Gemara itself. So that's a little unsatisfactory. I think we gave a share that year on a couple of. The Mishnah Berurah mentions such an idea about 10-15 times in the Mishnah Berurah, that it sounds like one should be machmer on such a thing, but because the poskim don't talk about it, so we don't have to be machmer on such a thing. So that's an when to apply that and when not to apply it, I don't have a clear answer for it. I'll just give an application that I saw a week ago. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Broid was here this past Shabbos, and he gave me the manuscript. He gave the Harfitzes also manuscript for his new sefer that he's coming out. He's writing a book on laws of converts after they convert. I mean, the application of halachos to converts. And the and he had one of the halachos, so I quickly looked up, so this is a question that's been bothering me for a very long time, and that is the halacha of tefilas kelim and bishul akum and those kinds of things, that if a non-Jew owns his vessels while he's not Jewish and then he converts, so it sounds like he should have to tovel all of his kelim. So that's generally the way that we pass him, but he quoted from Rav Asher Weiss. I didn't get a chance to look it up inside in Rav Asher, but he quoted Rav Asher Weiss as saying that he thinks that logically it sounds like it makes sense, but the poskim have all been quiet about this. We don't find any. The fact that there's no discussion about this going back maybe implies that maybe there is no such halacha, that you don't actually have to go ahead and do this. So I pointed out to Rabbi Broid that that's very suspect, because the reason that there were no shailos u'tshuvos about this, one could easily make the case, is because there were no converts. The idea of somebody converting in the middle of the 1800s, in the middle of the 1700s, I mean, you have to be crazy to actually want to become part of the Jewish people during that period of time. So the fact that so you have to be careful when to apply it. If it's something that has been applicable for all these years and there's no discussion of it, so then one can make a case. But if it's a case that could very likely never have been applicable, Rabbi Broid told me, he said, yeah, he's not convinced by the argument either. he believes that the Aruch, he told him, but he has the understanding that the Aruch HaShulchan never met a convert. The Aruch HaShulchan, he was talking about on Shabbos during the Shir as being major posing, he probably never actually met a convert. So, well, I was to just word around. Who in Lithuania is going to want to convert to be, you know, during that? There is the famous convert during the period of the Gra. But, yeah, they were few and far between during that era. So you have to know carefully when to apply such, make application of this and when not. But the idea of owning your matzah is, I saw as an interesting application of that din. Okay, so thank you everybody for coming.
So if you pay by credit card,
yeah, I don't know. We'll have to get up to that in the Ribbis Shirim. I'm not sure. Generally, the credit card is paid for. I mean, when you buy something from a credit card, the matzahs are paid for. You just have a deal with the credit card company that deals with the money. So that sounds like it should be okay, yeah.
What happened when you hold in the shmurim?
Is it actually a problem? I think Hashkaf, Mashkifim, take care of that enough. I don't think you have to be close to those.